When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And you are welcome along to the latest episode of the Huddle Breakdown with James here as host and my good friend Alan Morrison from Celtic by Numbers. Good morning from me, Alan. We're recording a little early for me here on a Tuesday, early Tuesday morning. I think you're already, what, 4 pints into your lunch? Is that where we're at?
a normal Tuesday. It's difficult to actually tell what time of day it is. We've settled into, I think, 2 weeks of gloom and drizzle. Autumn is officially here. Well, we nearly got flooded out last week, so it's an improvement.
Well, we're here to discuss and decompose and analyze the 4-1 victory at Tynecastle on the weekend against that colossus of managerial talent that was hired in Edinburgh. And then we're going to look ahead to tomorrow's Champions League game against Atletico Madrid. I mentioned to you before we went live, I have a confession to make. My attention was distracted a bit during the game. I was watching the game on my phone. We had a family obligation. And I was actually in the midst of you can see I was in a salon run by my three nieces who were ranging in ages of 7 to 2. So I've gotten the color out of my balding head when they did my hair, but my nails are still done. So for those watching on YouTube, you can see the glorious, being a good uncle, you have to.
It looks a bit faded. I think you've got to go full color.
Yes. Well,
layer it on. Yeah.
I didn't select the colors either, so I left them for full.
I don't think that's your color. I mean, I think in principle it's a great idea. I just don't think that's your color.
I don't think I have a color, to be honest with you, Alan, the way I look. But let's move ahead here. This was one of those games where it was an obliteration statistically. I think if we look at kind of the underlying metrics, both from a quality of chances, from a shots, possession, I mean, you name it, it was kind of a soup to nuts domination from the good guys for the good guys or by the good guys. So outside of teeing that up, what was your broad assessment of the game?
So when I watched the game, because it was on Sunday afternoon, I think we'd had a nice, very pleasant afternoon with some friends. So I didn't actually see it till sort of later that evening, and I was in a reasonably good mood at the time, and enjoyed the game and thought Celtic were brilliant, and that was it. And then, of course, you know, in the cold light of day, started watching it back again. And listen, I don't want to be the one that, you know, I think we do get stick sometimes for focusing on negatives. Part of that's to do with, you know, just not being cheerleady at all and trying to really sort of highlight where Celtic can improve. And I don't think there's anything particularly that came out in that game. Really what I'm leading to is I'm staggered actually at how terrible Hearts were. I mean that was a performance that I would almost have expected Naismith to have resigned after the game. It was that atrocious. I couldn't understand what they were trying to do at all.
Would you characterize it as Beale-esque?
Well, was it as bad as Beale? It doesn't have as good player. I mean, look, you've got a team that clearly has got virtually no pace in it, right? So what do you do? Well, you try and do what, you know, I mean, the team that was always, to me, the sort of slowest team in the league that we played in terms of the players was always St. Johnstone. And what Callum Davidson used to do was, of course, he would compensate for that by at least making them really compact. So you reduce the spaces between the players, especially defensively, and you try and, you know, move forward as a team as well, and you try and build the play. What you don't do is you don't have a really slow team and then bang long balls into the channels when all season you've been easily the third most possession dominant team in the league, and you tend to rack at 400 passes a game. You're obviously quite a team that is used to having the ball, keeping the ball. So I think, you know, you try to do that and exert some level of control. You don't leave enormous gaps between the lines. And then you've got three forwards who seem to, you know, be under orders to press, but none of them. I think Vargas was okay, but he kept committing fouls. The other two, Shankland and Lowry, were just hopeless at pressing. So it was so easy to play through the front first three, and then you're defending with seven players, and then there's an enormous gap between those three and the defense, and it was just so easy. It was so easy, and essentially, you're giving probably probably the best midfield in the league. You know, Hatate, O'Reilly, and McGregor, just giving them all the space in the world to play and completely dictate the game. So, you know, if I was Hearts, you know, you either push up and stay compact, or you drop back and stay compact, but you stay compact. You don't create, you don't stretch your own team, especially when you don't have the recovery pace. You don't press with forwards that can't press, and you don't bang long balls into the channels for slow forwards to chase after. With the likes of, you know, Carter Vickers or Johnson, who just gobbled those things up. So I had no idea what they were trying to do on the ball. I had no idea what they were trying to achieve off the ball. I thought it was a terrible performance from them. And then just basic things. I mean, the first two goals, you know, the O'Reilly goal was a wonderful, wonderful piece of skill. There's no doubt about that. But he just ran off the midfielder, just stopped following him. And similarly, you know, the second goal, I think the fantastic goal. But again, the Cochrane that was tracking Hatate just let him run off him. It's just basics. It's really basic defensive organisation and tracking your runners. Again, you know, the big mistake to give away that penalty. Cochrane completely missed a long high ball. It was just, I mean, so those individual errors were just really on top of what was systemically just an awful performance, an awful way that the team had been set up. And then, you know, we don't really put a lot of stock by these things, but after the game, I don't think I've seen a manager look so hopelessly out of his depth and defeated as Naismith looked. And he just sounded so unconvincing. He had nothing to say that I would have thought, if I was a Hearts fan, okay, we can get behind this guy. He understands what needs to be fixed here. I thought they were, and I'm sorry I'm focusing on the opposition, but they were beyond abject. They really were. I've never seen a Hearts team as poor as that I can remember. I know we had a 7-0 one there once, but I can't remember them being as poor as this.
Well, I think this one could have been a 7-0.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been surprising given how they set up. And this was always my bugaboo, which is the extent with which there's this almost cultural expectation that the Edinburgh clubs are going to play in a certain way against us at home, because that's just the expectation. And then it's, you know, it turns into this if it's not executed well, or if they don't have the personnel to do it. And yeah, that would, you know, when I saw what looked like Lawrence Shankland playing as the number 10, I was like, well, that's interesting. That's very, that's Beal-esque. Even Lauer, I mean, Lowry's had some decent games this season for them, but not at wing. I mean, again, what's he doing out in left wing, to your point about their midfield? So basically, they played us, you know, again, these things shift. I think it was more of a 4-4-2 defending, but nominally a 4-2-3-1 in attack with Shanklin as a 10 and basically two midfielders. I mean, that's in transitions they had.
Well, this is it. This is the problem. I think when they, you know, the 4-2-3-1 was more of an attacking shape. Most of these things are. I would expect them when without the ball to have fallen back into some kind of compact shape, but they didn't. They stayed in a rigid 4-2-3-1 with big gaps between the lines, and it was just so easy. It was so easy to play through.
Well, and that's a stat I'll throw out. As I did look at their average defensive distance, which is a metric. You know, whether it measures tackles, presses, duels, all that stuff, counter presses, and the average distance on the pitch. And their average was, I think, 5% higher than what their season average is so far. Right. So they're even more aggressive positionally in doing that versus us than they have been against other teams, which, again, maybe not a good idea generally. And I get averages or averages. You got to look at the dispersion. But I looked at the kind of the heat map and the event map and stuff too. And it was pretty wild how extended they were at times without much, you know, show for it. Meaning that they were almost cosplaying as a press. You know, they weren't really actually functionally pressing, even though they were kind of getting close enough that they could theoretically count that as a pressure, but it wasn't really causing any bother. It was one of those, and it really is the lack of athleticism and pace was pretty stark. Yeah. I mean,
James, one stat is, yes, we Celtic gave the ball away in their own defensive third once in the first half. So it was just ineffective, really.
Yeah. So that's I agree with you. That's probably the overarching driver of the game was how, because it, in fairness, it didn't look like it was due to us imposing onto them. It was more so that seemed to be their game plan, and then they didn't really adjust much to speak of, and it certainly made it easier for us relative to, you know, a bunkered opponent that, you know, is disciplined and narrow, that kind of thing. Let's highlight some of the positives on the Celtics side. Obviously, we mentioned the brilliance of the first goal from O'Reilly and the ball was, the pass was pretty good too. So just a nice sequence there. A lot of talk about Matt O'Reilly. You've been the president of his fan club since he was signed, I think it was fair to say. On weekend, but just generally his season so far.
Yeah. I mean, I like intelligent footballers and good decision makers. And he generally is. And you know, he looked so comfortable. And again, it was another one of those kind of all round performances in terms of, you know, defensive positioning, doing his job well in terms of recoveries, getting his foot in when he needed to, turning the ball over when he needed to, winning his duels, then getting the ball forward, and then also getting into the box as well. I've not got through collecting all the data yet, but he's you know, I actually the Kyogo goal, if you watch it carefully, he absolutely plays that ball to Kyogo. He flicks it onto Kyogo. He sees him because you can see his reaction as soon as his little flick goes through the defender's leg and reaches Kyogo. He absolutely went that. So that wasn't officially given as an assist, but I'm giving that one. So another goal, another assist. He created other chances as well. So again, it's just the all round nature of his game that is not there's not one thing. Again, one feature of him which I've not really written about, but I've talked about a little bit is. When you talk about packing, the most impactful packing is taking defenders out of the game. Obviously, if you can take defenders out of the game through passes or running, and nobody takes defenders out of the game more than Matt O'Reilly does. It's a feature. It's almost like it's such a noticeable thing. It's almost like he knows, if I play this pass, it really is risk reward, because if I take a defender out of the game, then you really are in business. You've completely disrupted the back line at that point. And, he'd taken eight defenders out of the game early into the second half. Now, to put that into context, O'Reilly, as I say, leads the squad in this ever since I've captured it. And it's normally around about 2-3 a game. So eight is a fantastic number for one for a single game. So yeah, listen, just again, an overall great performance. And then, you know, beside him you had Tati, who again was a mixture of the brilliant and the awful, you know, brilliant flick to set up the third goal, some lovely passes in the first half, and then again giving, you know, at least three you know, packed turnovers a couple of times. He literally just passed the ball straight back and suddenly it's like 2-on-2 at the back. Now, again, Hearts didn't have the pace to exploit that, but if that's Griezmann or Morata, then you're in huge trouble at that moment. In fact, you know, again, partway through the second half, he's up to 6 packed turnovers, which is just a ridiculously high number. A packed turnover is worse than it's not just giving the ball away; it's giving the ball away in such a way that you've basically put your teammates out of the game. They're now behind the ball and can't impact the defensive shape. So it's a serious offence, I would say. But you know, again, some beautiful touches in there. The setup for the second goal as well was fantastic for Maeda, that run. So you know, again, it's funny how even though, you know, when Hearts let Celtic play, it didn't actually change the way that Celtic play. To your point, people still pretty much performed as they do. You know, Maeda was busy but wasteful, as he has been. Palmer was a mixture again of turning the ball away, easily giving it up, but then the odd nice moment, nice insightful pass, nice change of direction. You know, so nobody performed differently to how they normally perform, but they were just allowed to breathe, I suppose. And, you know, Palmer, Hitati, Maeda, if they gave the ball away, lost the ball, they knew they were going to get it back very shortly in a decent position to try and create something. And that's how it, and McGregor was allowed to just pretty much tick things along quite easily. The defence was put under virtually no pressure. I think Hearts had something like 13 shots, but their XG was well below 1, so they were just really poor quality efforts that they had throughout the game. There was no real. I mean, I think Hart made something like 5 saves, but I don't remember any of them. You know what I mean? Because it's like they were just almost like fielding the ball, you know, almost like pass.
Yeah, from distance mostly. Yeah. I looked at O'Reilly so far this season, compared him to last season, and I think there's, yeah, thinking about because I think. There were people that got down on him a little last season because of the lack of goal scoring at times, and maybe, you know, some decent chances that he wasn't taking. And that pendulum has actually swung in a true mean reverting way. So his XG per game, he's basically doubling it right now with his post shot XG and goal scoring. So, you know, he wasn't as bad as he looked last season, and he's probably not quite as good as he looks right now in this kind of short sample in the season so far. But his overall, you know, he's definitely getting higher quality, higher volume number of chances, and he's, you know, the finishing's been great, and keepers haven't been, you know, they've been tough. Like it's I think his average post shot XG per shot's like over 0.6, which is, you know, unsustainably high, like great and incredibly high. So those are tough shots for keepers to be saving, and they haven't been, generally speaking. So that's the positive, but the nuance. I mean, let's not get over our skis that he's going to score 40 goals. I mean, people aren't going to expect that, but you know what I mean. It wouldn't be crazy if he ends up having a stretch here where maybe some of these brilliant finishes aren't quite as brilliant. And then the other part, which I was actually surprised when I looked at it, the degree with which kind of the average chance quality on his creativity has dropped. But that, I think, again, that's more so from the systemic issues. We see that across the board with and we've talked about this repeatedly.
He's more of his chances are set piece chances, though, because he's taking all the corners now. So that's, I think, a big driver for that dropping.
For that, but if he looks just at open play, it's down materially as well. Again, in the spots, stats bomb data, at least. So he's, you know, kind of sub 0.1, I think, even, which, you know, again, would be, for him, And even if you just benchmark against prior seasons of creative Celtic midfielders, that would be on the low side. But yeah, I'm not, to your point, you know, good example of, you know, using our eyes, but more so just judgment, which is, I don't think that's due to his decision-making as much as systemic issues. Because again, to your point on his still taking out defenders and still breaking lines, and, you know, so and if you look at, you know, things like his turnover ratio and being dispossessed, those numbers haven't moved much. So it's more so, I think, functioning of what's going on with the system and the other players around him, and the difference between that the season and last that we've talked about quite a bit already. So at this point, I'm chalking that up to as being the material factor there.
We're still in the sort of small sample stage. So for example,
right,
what I just talked about there, whereby I'm convinced that he played the ball through to Kyogo for that goal, and
right,
probably StatsBomb won't credit him with an assist for that, and that's actually correct, a really high value chance that he, yep, he should have got, which that's going to deflate his numbers across all of the providers, I suspect. Whereas mine, there'll be a disparity there. And at this stage, because it's, again, small sample, that one chance actually will have quite a big impact, because it was such a high-value chance.
100% agreed. So, yeah, and that's the other thing that jumped out at me when I debriefed on the game from the match report. You know, it was the degree with which you've got, you know, the center backs just completely manhandled the game, meaning that it was like a walk in the park. So they were able to rack up a lot of output and a lot of things, particularly going forward. And I think that was to the point of them not really being coherently pressured much. So it was, you know, like it was another one of those games where Liam Scales looks like Beckenbauer, but some of that's because of maybe who the opposition was and how they set up the play.
We'll see if he can chase Morata around all night.
Right. Yeah. We'll get to that in a little bit. But yeah, the one you know, major downside obviously was the goal that they scored, which, you know, made a little nervy, I guess, for you know, at that point I was actually in the car, listening to the TV broadcast on my phone while driving. And when I looked at the highlights later, I mean, it was more like wasn't really much in it. But
no, yeah, it was made a terrible, terrible, terrible error. And then the actual shot's a great shot, because he sets it off outside the post and it just clips the post and goes in. So even though it's a long way out, I don't think any blame for Hart on that one. I think it's just a great finish.
No. Yeah. And that's, I don't think even the scoreline reflected the competitive balance within the game because of that. Because it was, you know, kind of a, I wouldn't call it a fluky goal, because it was such a great finish from Shanklin, but yeah, pretty dreadful giveaway, and then just a brilliant finish. So wasn't much in it as far as chance creation. So they were barely in our box the entire day. So any other thoughts here? We're going to try and keep this one a little shorter today, as we'll do a review on Thursday. So any other than just slagging off Naismith and their and highlighting some of the brilliant moments from our side, but
I don't know where they go from here. I mean, like you say, it was odd that they
cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Boyce is obviously getting older now, and he's had a bad injury. So he's even slower than the ones that they had on the pitch. But they've been using him as that sort of number 10 that Shanklin was trying to play. But the two of them together, they're both clever players. Although they don't have a lot of pace, they link well, and their movement's good, and they're good technical players. I don't understand, if you're going to ask Shanklin to do that job, why don't you just stick Boyce on and be done with it? Because again, I know Lowry had some nice touches, but he's like a man down defensively. So, Boyce will at least battle. Mackay's probably the one that can cover the ground for them a little bit. And he was obviously injured. I don't know who else they've got that might have a bit of pace. Oda, I think he came on, but he's a little bit quicker. But yeah, I don't know where they go. But listen, it's another, we don't know what the impact has been in terms of these kind of expected points type tables on Celtics. The fact that the fixture list, the way it's been for Celtics so far this season, we've played all the sort of harder teams away, really. But Hearts, I think, are like down to be seventh or eighth at this moment, which is absolutely shocking, really. As I say, if you're looking at the data and looking at that, you'd be sacked, I think, if you were a Brighton or a Brentford or something like that, you'd be out by now. Get somebody in while you've still got a chance of winning the semi-final, League Cup semi-final. But for Celtic, I think it's a good morale booster that injuries are clearing up, so it's all positive in that sense. I'd still like to see more cohesion. I'd like to see more consistency from the likes of Maeda, Palmer, Hitati, especially. In terms of their attacking play, there's flashes and there's good bits, but there's quite a bit of junk as well. I'd just like to see more try and reach the level that Kyogo and O'Reilly are playing at, because I think those two are playing at such a high level. It's kind of carrying the attack still a little bit. Having said all that, that's two games, seven different goal scorers. So that's a nice fact.
Yeah, I actually put a tweet out when the fixture list came out, and because at that point we were still in kind of the not the ugly honeymoon period of Rodgers' return, so that I think there were still kind of latent knives ready to come out for him, and with my assessment of the transfer window not being really great at that point. Trying to manage expectations a little bit in my own little way about, the first 11 games, the fixtures were tougher for us, almost all the tougher games away, Rangers being the opposite, and said basically wouldn't be shocking if the league table was close or even Rangers were ahead after the first round. Obviously, we've gone the exact opposite direction. I don't think that's because we've been blowing the doors off performance-wise. We've been getting the results, obviously, but and we got a healthy dose of assists from Mickey. But I think it's interesting how much the flip in the fixture list will stress test us now, because because of that cultural issue of teams home actually having a go, so to speak. And they're not, for the most part, trying that when they come to Celtic Park. I wonder how we'll handle, because as I've seen this team more and more, I get more and more, if I think about kind of relative strengths and weaknesses, breaking down the low block is increasingly my concern. And, you know, so whereas in July, I was maybe on the margins more concerned about being on these away fixtures, I think that was probably the wrong take. And I may actually get more concerned about the should have been. And I think about kind of the competitive issues, you know, having St. Mirren and Motherwell and some of these more organized, better managed teams, not try and have a go, basically play in December for a 0-0 at Celtic Park and setting up that way. You know, that makes me more nervy than going to Tynecastle versus a Naismith managed team that's completely incoherent. So we'll see as the calendar flips here and we finish out the first 11. Well, let's look ahead to tomorrow then. We've got an easy game. We're home in the Champions League, so this should be a slam dunk. We've got Atletico Madrid coming in. I did look that I think the one major injury they have is Depay is still out or is out. And so at least listed as out until I think early November, mid November. So again, I don't know how accurate those reports are, but I suspect he won't be playing. I'll give you a quick summary because I did do some benchmarking, looked at them. Right. So far this season, I think they're fourth in the table in La Liga. Their kind of their underlying metrics would have them lower than that. Actually, their chance creation hasn't been all that impressive as they are apt to be. They are very well organized in limiting chances. They have the lowest XG conceded in the league, and basically their goal scoring has been excellent. They've kind of been overperforming their XG, which, again, given who they have at the striker position, would not be surprising, particularly in small samples. They've been playing almost universally 3-5-2, 5-3-2, depending on home and away. They're not all that, again, under their manager, they're not all that bothered about possession. Some games they'll have a lot of possession, even on the, you know, away, depending on the opposition. But, you know, they'll go to Osasuna and have 35-40% possession and win, you know, comfortably. So, you know, it'll be interesting, I think, how Rodgers sets up and decides to tactically approach the game, because I suspect they'll be fine with us taking possession and kind of controlling, quote unquote, possession for long stretches if we decide to do that. And it looked to hit us on the break, which, you know, probably wouldn't be the craziest idea from them. So that's why when this group was put out, this was probably the fixture I was most worried about. is Atletico Madrid at home, actually, not even in Madrid. So it'll be interesting. Any thoughts on what those comments and just generally this matchup going into tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same. I mean, this is a horrible team to have to play, to be honest. They don't lose many goals. They don't lose many games against anybody. You know, I know you say that they're overperforming in XG. That's absolutely right. But by goals scored per game and, you know, goals conceded per game, they're first and second in La Liga at the moment, 2.6 goals for, 0.9 against. If they win their game in hand in La Liga, they'll go top. They'll be top of that league. You know, they've won six in a row. The last six matches, they've scored 16 goals, including beating Real Madrid 3-1. And all this, you know, after they'd spent 14 million on not really anyone in particular in the summer. They'd sold about 100 million euros worth of talent. So they've not suddenly brought in loads of players. This is a very experienced, gnarly team, you know, who know how to, you know, who grind out a result and get a result. To your point, you know, yeah, they're about 50-50 on possession on average, but like you say, they'll dominate if they can, and they're not bothered if they don't. Yeah, they play the sixth most number of long balls in La Liga, which I think is interesting. I think they'll look to try and get the pace of Morata and Griezmann, and also the two wing backs are pretty rapid as well.
The wing backs, yep.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, the wing backs are almost completely provide them with their width. This is going to be the completely opposite of Tynecastle. McGregor, O'Reilly, and Hatate are going to be in a forest of players. You know, they absolutely jam the middle of that pitch. They control the middle of the pitch. Celtic's best hope really is they don't really control the flank areas, and their fullbacks do like to bomb on. So you'd think that this is Maeda, Kyogo pulling wide, Palmer. That's really the best chance Celtic have, I think, is almost catching them on Celtic playing on the break and catching them with diagonals or balls into the full behind the fullback wing back positions. Because they don't care if they feel that they need to drop deep, they'll drop deep. They don't feel the need to push up. So if they'll play a sweeper out of the back three if they need to as well. Because again, these are very experienced defenders, and they find a way. So this is, I think this is an incredibly difficult task. We're not going to see lots of long balls, lots of crosses into the box. I think they're nearly last in La Liga for banging crosses into the box. So it's all going to be about creating quick movement, clever passes in and around the box, especially from the wing backs, the two centre forwards. I mean, Morata and Griezmann both have absolutely terrific movement. Their movement is wonderful. And so, even though Morata's not necessarily going to sprint away from anyone, he can get away from anybody over 2 or 3 yards in the box very, very, very easily. And Griezmann's just a very, very clever, intelligent player. So two very intelligent forwards, a lot of pace in the wide areas, good technical ability in central midfield, allied to a lot of grit and a lot of dig and a lot of strength and tackling. That, you know, a real chance that, you know, we'll get overpowered a little bit in the middle of the pitch there. So yeah, this is going to be a really tough one, I think. In all honesty, I don't see many weaknesses in this team. I mean, you could make a case for them. You know, they're genuine La Liga contenders this year, even though they haven't, as I say, particularly strengthened the squad. But we all know under Simeone, it's the power of the system, and bringing in players like Azpilicueta, you know, hugely experienced, knowledgeable player that, you know, playing against a team of Celtic's standard, you know, he might get exposed against Man City and the likes, but he's probably not going to get exposed that much against Celtic, but we can hope, I suppose.
Yeah, well, and I wanted to clarify my comments about them overperforming. One of the reasons that they're overperforming, I think, is that if you break down their XG per shot, you know, we've talked about that as a red flag for Celtic this season potentially, meaning that we're, you know, the average chance quality that we're creating versus what we're conceding, we usually have a wide gap. You know, it's usually like 0.12 versus 0.08 or 0.07, that kind of thing. And we're more closer to parity this season so far. And again, expect that'll change. But they're basically right. I think they're second from the top in their league. And I think the top one is on low volume. If it's one of the smaller clubs that maybe probably low sample size, probably just had a couple of really good chances on the counter or something. And then their average shot they concede is, like, to your point, I mean, in the Simeone system in just limiting chances, they, you know, well under 0.1 as far as chance. Yeah, it's
they'll give Celtic space out wide, but they'll pack the middle, and it'll be very difficult to break down. Yeah, I mean, they have, no, to your point, you're absolutely spot on. I think they've scored 23 goals off of like 17 XG or something, and the conversion rate is crazy. They're converting 16% of all shots. Now, anything, yeah, you know, 10, you know, the next highest in the league is like 12%. So I think. Based on only one season of evidence with Celtic last season, I think there's something where this isn't a linear thing. I think there's a thing where if you continually create good chances, which Postecoglou's team did, and by that I mean getting the ball to people low on to their feet in the middle of the goal, if you keep doing that, then suddenly your conversion rate doesn't go up. It's more exponential than it is linear, and therefore your shot conversion goes up. and you start overperforming on your XG, and your XG per shot goes up and all that. And I don't think that's a pure linear relationship. I'm not a mathematician, and I couldn't model it, but that's just my gut feeling. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that with Atletico Madrid this season, where you think they're overperforming, and how much of it is down to luck? But then you see that they've got a coherent way of playing, and you see that the quality of their strikers is very, very high. You sort of think, well, it might not be luck. It might just be they consistently, you know, create very good chances. And to your point, you know, with three central defenders that won't get dragged out off the width of the penalty area, and three midfielders who can all defend parked in front of them, they're going to be very difficult to break down.
Yeah, this is where I'll go back to where I began this segment of the conversation of the show is, you know, if I think matchup wise, this is a bit of a nightmare. And from a Rodgers tactics perspective, I suspect, and even just some of his comments that he's made heading into this, even before the presser will be today. I don't know if it was yesterday or it'll be today, but you know, the understandable respect paying homage to their attacking talent, particularly the striker position. I wonder if he does kind of set up to be defensive and on margin. You know, again, he's not going to be an extremist, but you know, play more like we did at Feyenoord, and even though we're at home. Because of this matchup specifically, and because I agree with you, their back line isn't the paciest. So if you're going to try and get something off of them, and again, it's not like they're not facing this level of talent, but on the margin, you know, Maeda and Kyogo getting in behind on the counter, if we were able to pull them out a little bit. And get in behind. To me, that would be the most likely possibility for us to get some really high quality chances. I suspect that's probably in Simeone's head too. So maybe they'll just stand on their sides and kick the ball back and forth with neither one wanting the ball.
Well, to be honest with you, this is my biggest hope, I think, is that, you know, traditionally, and again, listen, they've been to one game at Vallecano and scored seven. They scored three in I think most of the last six games that they've won, that they've scored at least three. So they might come at us, and that would be horrendously worrying if they did. But if they set up to be a sort of classic Simeone away performance of being a bit circumspect, and Rodgers is a bit circumspect, you know, if it's still 0-0 in the 60th minute, I'm going to be pretty happy with that, to be honest with you. Because then you just never know. You know, then you're down to, well, football, things can happen, right? We get a free kick or whatever. Then my fear is that out of character, you know, they go for it and they absolutely go at Celtic, because I think that could be really difficult.
Yeah, I agree. That's my hope, is that it's kind of a just stodgy 0-0 for a long stretch, and maybe we get some mean reverting luck in our favor, and some of their attacking output has a bad day, and that high
all
conversion
the shots
rate
go straight at your heart, yeah,
right. or yeah. Griezmann just all of a sudden starts ballooning balls over the crossbar, yeah. But I think the consensus is concern, and hopefully we keep it close. And you know, I think you know, it's a single game, anything can happen. So obviously we can you know, get a result with a good performance, and if they have a slightly off day. But I'd say if both teams are fully at it, it's one I'm nervous about. Any final thoughts? We'll wrap it up here right around the 40 minute mark for uncharacteristically.
No, that's to say, again, conscious of maybe that being a little bit negative. But again, you know, think back last season, if we were as coherently consistent in our attacking plays we were last season, then that's what we were saying every week. And you'd say, well, you know, we won 4-0, should have been 6. And next week I expect we'll win 4-0 again. That's what the performance data was telling us. This season, I think we're inching forward. And the most fascinating thing, again, for me is is really, and it alludes to what you said there, James, it's how Rodgers set Celtic up against this team. I think that's, to me, the most fascinating. I think you'll have a plan. I think it will probably be a good plan. And I just hope we get that little bit of luck, that if we stick to plan and we're performing credibly to it, that we get that little bit of rub of the green that I think we need. And it's what Celtic need, you know, what most pot four teams need to get anything out of these games. You do need to get that little rub where the, you know, you don't get some obscure VAR penalty happen out of nothing when the ball ricochets off somebody's arm, or, you know, Keogh does take one of the two chances he's going to get during the game type of thing. So, yeah, listen, we're always hopeful. And I think what Rodgers does will be very interesting.
Okay, well, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks for joining us. Those listening on podcasts, you can rate and review on your favorite distribution platform, iTunes or Spotify. And for those watching on YouTube, we appreciate you looking at our two ugly mugs for 42 minutes. And feel free to subscribe if you haven't already and get involved in the comments below. I think we're going to be back as a threesome, an erotic threesome on Thursday to review the game. Oh, boy. Oh, my nails. I got my nails now, Alan. I mean, let's go. Let's rock. Let's party.
Tough nails will be erotic.
That's right. So we'll be back some point on Thursday to review tomorrow's game, and hopefully it's a celebratory one. So hopefully everyone gets a chance to review or enjoy the game tomorrow. And we will talk to you on Thursday.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.